This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here along with you. Well, the increased access to technology in our lives and our currently plugged-in social environment has brought with it certain benefits. But some new research has shown that this constant barrage of social communication can also contribute to the development of some psychopathology. Well, here with more on all of this are Dr. Teresa Blatchford. She's a fourth-year psychiatry resident in the Department of Psychiatry at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Mirabel Matar, a child and adolescent psychiatry fellow, also in the Department of Psychiatry at Upstate Medical University. Welcome to you both. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
So internet use, especially use of social media, has led to both what we know of as positive and negative effects. Explain that, Dr. Matar.
Well, thank you, Linda, for the introduction. It was really good. Actually, most people are plugged in right now to the social media and the internet in general and to our phones. Well, the good parts in general, which common sense says, is that we can be more connected to each other, which was not there before. I know from my parents and grandparents that they used to wait for letters for people to go in boats, and after 30 days they will get a letter, which was really painful, I can imagine. But right now we can have this more quick access. However, studies and also common sense has shown that a lot of people are too plugged in, and they're almost in a virtual world when there are real people around them that they are not talking to. So this is in general what I've seen.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, Dr. Blatchford, there's been some actually well-documented association between internet use and this notion of psychopathology. I mean, some things I think that I've come across, excuse me, have been allusions to things like problems with addiction, perhaps insomnia, even psychosis and suicide. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's true. We've known about something, you know, internet addiction for some time, but now something that might be similar but also separate is social media addiction. And some of the studies we came across have shown that teenagers especially are having problems related to excessive social media use, problems that you typically see with addiction. Decreased real-life relationships and satisfaction in relationships, decreased academic performance, insomnia, depression, suicide have been shown to be connected to excessive social media use.
You know, you can't walk down the street today and not be struck by the fact that most people, especially if they're walking alone, have a phone that they're looking at.
That's true.
I mean, and usually that is, they're in contact in some way through social media, I would think, or the internet in general, emails, with another person. But it's almost like we've lost the idea or the possibility of being comfortable being alone, for one thing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes even when there are other people surrounding someone, they are also not looking up. They're looking down on their phone. As you alluded to, they're not relating to the people around them. So I could see where that would absolutely potentially develop some serious kind of issues. And it's ironic to me, and I think you both must agree, being psychiatrists, that the one thing that would potentially link you to other people also has the potential to isolate you from perhaps the people right in your immediate environment.
This is very true.
So who is most at risk for this, Dr. Matar? I mean, you alluded, Dr. Blatchford alluded to teenagers, but in general, who is most at risk?
I would say more the teenagers, patients with psychopathology and mental illness at baseline may be more at risk of developing an addiction or excessive use because they are unable to form real connections in real life, or able but with difficulty, and the social media is a place to just virtually connect with someone.
And there's an illusion almost of
there is
of
an
a community.
Illusion, yes, of a community, of support from people, which can be true. We saw that a lot of groups are made online and they are very effective, just such as breast cancer support groups or
sure.
anything like that.
Or even online dating, you know, does end up with real significant potential
this
relationships.
This is very true. But to go back to your question about who's at risk of more excessive and pathological use, I would say the teenagers, because they're not really well developed yet to know where the limit is. And I would say more the people with psychopathologies and at baseline, or the personalities that are more reclusive than others, people who are shy or avoidant, might go to social media more than others.
What type of pressure, Dr. Blatchford, do you think gets generated? Because that's something that's often referred to, or I think that's noted, that within the world of social media, there's a certain amount of a virtual kind of an illusory world, not really a real world,
yeah.
And there's a lot of peer pressure that gets generated from looking at people's pictures on Facebook and their lives. Everyone's putting forth this kind of illusion,
true,
as opposed to a real, authentic self.
Mm.
What do you find, or what do you think about that?
Well, I think something important about that, one of the key things about social media, is that you are sharing personal information. And that can lead to, and when you're looking at other people's personal information, it can lead to jealousy, anger. People can judge you. You can become depressed. And that kind of leads also to the cyberbullying. People posting negative things on other people's walls. People seeing something that someone else has posted and saying something very negative about it. That can make someone very...
And people can jump on that bandwagon en masse. I mean, there have been stories about that, and you know there's been stories about teens committing suicide as a result of that. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with psychiatrist Teresa Blatchford and Mirabel Matar. We're talking about the effects of the use of social media on mental health. So you did recently, the two of you engaged in kind of an analysis or a study. Tell us about what you did and why. Why did you do it?
Well, it started with I was on call, and there was a patient who came to the ER, to the emergency room, saying that she was suicidal after someone unfriended her on Facebook. And it was very surprising to me that this is the amplitude that someone can feel that distressed after a certain act on social media. And then I started looking up stuff with Teresa, and we did a meta-analysis, or a literature review, of many articles that talk about mental illness as with social media. The findings were very surprising at times.
So that's what you basically did. So in doing that, how long of a time frame did you look at? In other words, is it mostly recent things that have been written? How far back did your research go, Teresa? Do you remember?
I think it was in the last 4 or 5 years, and actually there was not a lot of research before that, because social media has started mainly in 2000s and something. So I remember that we went far along, but there was not a lot of things before.
But so overall, it clearly you found certain... Well, let's start with something that I guess is maybe uncharted. What were some of the positive things? Because obviously you didn't only find negative. What were some of the positive things you found in terms of the use of social media or the internet with mental illness?
Some of the more positive things had to do with support. There was a study of women with breast cancer, and ones that posted on social media were found to feel that they had more support, were able to say encouraging things to other women, which made them feel good. Also with hemodialysis patients that were using the internet for research, actually had more knowledge and were happier.
How about this idea of internet therapy? Because that's something that's been posited before as a potential help to people who are in physically are isolated locations and or maybe don't have the means to find, you know, some kind of mental health support.
Yes, they talked more about two things. One is telepsychiatry, which is a real psychiatrist or psychologist is sitting in their office and they're talking to someone in a rural area, which is what me and Teresa have done here at the VA. But the other part were the applications that we can use online, either free or paid, where you can get therapy without really going anywhere. and without even seeing a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but by talking to the computer and putting in your symptoms and then getting back cognitive and behavior therapy, which is more like a teaching therapy that tells you, okay, so now you are anxious, do this, do that.
So very pragmatic, practical suggestions for people.
Yes.
Is there any research that supports the efficacy of that type of therapy?
Yes, it has shown that they are very successful, especially because it is a very pragmatic approach. There was a new application that is called Mood Gym, MOODGYM, where you put, they have a lot of questions and then they put you in a certain category and then they ask you questions. So it has been shown to be very effective, yep.
So getting back to some of the negatives now, because those obviously are positives, and we all know that there are a lot of positives about staying in touch with your friends, your family, and all the good things that social media offer. But you did find some negative findings. Can you just give me a sense overall of what you found?
When I first got interested in this topic as well, it was from seeing patients in the ER, and what I've seen is people being very upset about being bullied in social media, to the point where they're depressed and they're self-harming and wanting to even think about committing suicide. So cyberbullying was a big negative that is really very, very dangerous and scary that it's going on and it's having that effect. So some of the studies looked at kind of what some of the characteristics were of the people being bullied and the people that were doing the bullying, and actually found that they had a lot of similar characteristics, but the people doing the cyberbullying were actually different than the ones doing kind of in-person bullying in schools and things.
In what way?
The people that were doing the in-person bullying were not the same ones that were doing it in social media, although they had the same characteristics of kind of antisocial behavior, aggressiveness, that kind of thing. So I'm not sure why certain people
gravitate to the cyber versus the real.
Right.
Well, it must be harder in some sense to face your, your, you know,
victim
yeah, as opposed to. There's an anonymity or potential of anonymity in the cyber world, and I think that's something that's been talked about a lot. Is people can, especially teens, perhaps,
yes.
It's too easy in a sense to engage in that kind of behavior.
This is true. Yeah.
So. At this point, there was also some correlation, I guess, between this notion of spreading suicidal thoughts. And again, do you think that that has been a significant factor?
It has been significant, especially in the teenagers population, where it's like a copycat suicide. When they see that someone is posting, oh, I'm feeling so sad, I want to commit suicide, other people start thinking, oh, maybe I should do the same thing because I'm also feeling depressed. It's very tough to deal with.
So in the little bit of time we have left, because we're running out of time, what do you conclude? Is there more research that has to be done? What should we be doing?
Yeah, I think the overall message is social media is very powerful, and there are a lot of things it can be used for that are positive. There's a lot of information out there. It's a great way to get information out and to also monitor trends, do research, give information, and even for treatment. But just to be aware that there's possibility for addiction, bullying, depression, that all those can kind of come with it, especially with excessive use.
So use with care.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thanks very much for coming in. My guests have been Dr. Teresa Blatchford. She's a fourth-year residency psychiatry resident at Upstate Medical University, and Dr. Mirabel Matar, a child and adolescent psychiatry fellow also at Upstate Medical University. Thanks again.
Thank you.
I'm Linda Cohen. You're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.